Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about generational differences. And we see that a lot because, well, a new age of people is entering the workforce and lots of people are working longer. So we've got all kinds of generations. Oftentimes I'm in a room with negotiation with four generations of people. Yes. Now, sometimes they're not all of equal negotiating power, but they've all got a say, and that's why they're in the room. And so it's interesting to see that and to see how people react differently. So we're going to start out with our general question, because we always do that, and then we're going to get into it because we're practical people. What generational differences do we encounter within our context? Within our context of a negotiation, a dispute resolution, a mediation, an alternative dispute resolution, whatever it is that we're doing where we're getting people together and we have to reach a successful and workable outcome. Because we like theory just as well as anybody else, and it's nice, but we like to be able to really have impact. We like to do something if we're going to really think about it and really, really analyze, well, what's wrong and what could be done better, right? Right. Yes, I think generationally, the first thing we're going to talk about, which is lots of people, thank you all for being here, lots of people are sending in, is technology. It is kind of a little bit of a divide. Yes, technology, the generational difference that exists and that is perceived to exist, right? Okay, I'm going to call this manners. It's kind of an emphasis on manners and whether or not they're important. People are talking about timeliness and general hygiene and appearance, right? And respect for other people, right? Yeah, and what does that mean and how is it shown is the question to this. And culture, maybe, right? What other generational difference do we have? I'm going to call quite a few of these a comfort zone difference. Our comfort zone is the concept of this is how it's always been, so this is how it should be, right? And that's a comfort zone, and we have different kinds of comfort zones because to a certain extent, different people went to different schooling and have different cultures, right? Yes. The comment's been made that there's more of a tendency nowadays to create your own culture. Because you can. You can reach out and meet. You can pretty much find a group that's doing whatever it is you like to do on the internet and reach out to them, no matter what it is. And we're not talking about something disgusting or dirty or illegal, but just something that you really, really value. And it is a concept that in the past, you kind of had your group chosen for you, your culture, because it was who you knew, who you came in contact with. But now you know the whole world because you've got the internet, right? And also ways of connecting personally, like on Skype and stuff, and social media, so that you really are connecting and not just looking at a group from kind of an outsider's perspective. Yeah. I'm going to go solve for comfort zone differences and cultural differences. Mm-hmm. So what are we going to do to bridge this, to solve it? Because we like to know what to do about stuff on this show and not just complain about it, because complaining's nice and it puts the issues out in the open, but it doesn't get you anywhere. So we want to know, really, as a practical matter, how should we resolve this? What should we do? Right? Yes. Yes, thank you. A lot of you have been listening over the years. I'm so proud. Yes, we're going to break out the civility rules, for one thing, so that we create a convivial atmosphere, right? We're going to break out empathy, yes, so that, because empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to go outside our comfort zones and maybe do it with each other. That would be fun, and learn stuff and experience something. I took somebody to the symphony the other day. I really like the symphony. There's a very good professional symphony in my town. They win all kinds of national awards and international awards. And they're in a fancy theater. And it's a lovely experience. And I took somebody who'd never heard of it, never been to the theater, never done it, never experienced it, didn't think they'd like it, and they were like, wow, that was really cool. I really liked it. And I was pleased because they really listened intently and looked around and at intermission asked intelligent questions and really had enthusiasm for it and probably posted it on their social media that what they had done and that was really, it was really kind of cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, in order to bridge the gap, let's have some mentoring. Let's volunteer to mentor someone who's not us, right? Yeah. And remember that goes both ways, because you say mentor, you generally think of somebody who's older helping somebody who's younger, generationally. But that's not true. The best mentoring relationships, and I've mentored many times, the best mentoring relationships go in both directions. Both parties get some sort of a benefit, because then nobody is obligated and like that. Both parties get a benefit. It might not be the same thing. You might get a benefit to understand something social, for example, if you're younger, and something technology-wise if you're older, right? So if you have a mentor and you're a mentee also, goes both ways, then the different talents should complement each other. Yes. So let's start. Let's start with technology, which is kind of a bugaboo, and everybody thought of it immediately when they thought about the word generational differences. Come to think of it, me too, right? Sometimes this is true, that there is indeed a generational technology gap. People who are in business, well, I am, for example. I've been an attorney. I've been doing this for more than 30 years. That means when I first started, there was no internet. Is that a long time ago? Well, no, not really. It's with most people's lifetimes. But there was no internet. If you were really cool and you really had a far-reaching, very modern office, you had a Selectric typewriter where you could change the ball and change the font. And it wasn't a manual where you had the typing was uneven, or an electric, which was not as good, right? That was considered to be, that's pretty darn good, right? Yeah, the telephone still existed. Cell phones, I don't remember when cell phones came in, about the same time that the internet, I think, showed up. It was about that time on the cusp, right? About 25 years ago, I remember when a cell phone, and don't all write in, I remember when a cell phone looked, your personal cell phone, was a miracle. It was something that you took with you, and it didn't have to have any kind of a cord connection. I mean, people came to look at it if you had one, because it was an office expense. I had one. It was very cool, but it was quite expensive. And there was, I think, one carrier. I think it was Motorola. And maybe Motorola was the phone. But I mean, really. And if any of you seen a World War II movie where they have those phones that are, maybe it's not quite World War II, maybe Korea or something, but they've got phones on the battlefield that look like bricks. That's what it looked like, and it weighed as much, too. And it was a fabulous piece of technology, and soon, like all technology, it got smaller and smaller and smaller. But it was not something that everyone had, and you couldn't text or look at the Internet. This is all different, right? Which means that people who in their 50s even, because that was 30 years ago, did not go to school using technology, did not grow up using it like the new generation did, where there's always been technology. It had to be learned, because it was not something that you used when you were in college or law school or something like that. It all had to be learned. It all came in later. But now people use technology easily, like when they're in preschool, they use a computer, right? They use a laptop. They use those apps with the children's programs and what I would call a cartoon, but probably isn't called a cartoon anymore, the animation and like that. Yeah, I see kids using it all the time. They're using a phone. They're using an iPad. They're sitting, I don't know, in a restaurant, and they are playing a game online, right? Yeah. It's an alphabet game or some sort of darn thing. I don't know. Maybe it's a bigger game than that. But that's a different generation, a different mindset, a different idea about technology. There's also a myth that's perception. The myth is, the perception is, that if you're more than 40s, maybe a little bit more than that, you don't know how to use technology and you're resistant. This is not true. I love technology. Most of my peers do. We use it lots. Now, we don't use it just to play with it. This is true. We don't generally play games or mess with the app to see if we can hack it. But we've adopted it for the practical things that we need it to do, right? Yeah, we know a lot. It's a myth that generationally nobody knows how to use computers. Not anymore. Maybe that was true when these things first came into being. Might have been true 20 years ago, even. But not anymore. It's a preconception. It's a myth. You know how the myth... Yes, thank you. We have a lot of new generation people on the line. I'm grateful. Fabulous. Welcome to everyone. A lot of folks are saying the myth works both ways. And if you're youngish, you get asked all kinds of tech questions that you don't know the answer to, for God's sake. You're not a tech. You are an attorney. You know how to do as much as I know how to do. You know how to do the stuff that you use every day and applies to your clients, right? Yeah. You know how to hold a go-to meeting. But you don't know how to fix something or what went wrong, and people come up to you and they expect you to be able to just do it, right? Yes. People hand you their phones. See, nobody ever hands me their phone. But people do, right? And I've seen people do this. And I've been guilty of asking, do you happen to know of somebody younger than I am, do you happen to know what to do with this? Because sometimes it is something easy that people know. But a lot of times it's not, right? Yeah. Yes. Yes. And sometimes it's obvious to someone who has been brought up with technology, but it isn't necessarily obvious to someone else. And this is the part where everybody has to be civil and polite, right? Yes. Because we're going to talk about civility rules and bridging the gap. This is true, too. There is an idea in technology by people who are of a technology-born generation. They've never seen a world that wasn't technology-forward and didn't keep moving fast technology-wise. There is a perception that technological change is always good, right? We should upgrade, we should update, we should do this, we should fly to the next thing, go now, go switch. It's not necessarily true. We all have to sit down together and see if there's a practical reason why we're switching, or it's just the new thing, and there's a bias towards new thing. Because if it's really working well, you know, there's an old expression, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And sometimes something is really working well. I see this with organizations. They've got something that's working. They've got an internal something that's working a lot of times, or some way of connecting with their clients, or something that they're doing that is really effective. And they see something new, and someone recommends that they switch and overhaul and make the whole thing need training is what the key is to this. Because people have gotten used to it. And it's not old people, it's just people have gotten used to it and it's working. And the new one is new and different, but is it better? Will it be more effective? Will it be a good thing? If the answer to those questions is, doesn't change very much and we're doing what we've got is really good and really sturdy and it's still supported by whatever needs to support it, right? Yeah, the answer is, well, not really. It's like everything else. It's a marketing ploy. It's a way to get fees and to change things. But the answer is, do I need this change? It's like if cell phones come out constantly. Do you need to change to the new cell phone? Well, okay, eventually you do because they wear out. But not every 6 months. Unless there's some sort of a new feature that you'd really, really, really like. But if not, hey, I've had my Apple phone for a little while. I am about to change it because some idiot, that would be me, actually dropped it and made a hairline crack in the glass, in the face of it. And yes, don't even tell me about the little stick-on thing that you put on when they're brand new that keeps it all together because I've got it. Yeah, it's still cracked. So I'm going to need a new one. But it's not going to be – and it's going to wear out. It's what? They have an obsolescence of, what, 2 years? It's like 3 years old. Oh, my God. It's so old I can't even speak about it. But that would be a reason to change, right? Yes. And if you're going to change technology, we're going to need some training, right? Some careful, sympathetic, there are no dumb questions in the world training. Yeah. Yes. We encountered a new system at Recipe for Peace Now, and it was great, but this is really dumb. People didn't realize that instead of clicking on an arrow or a tab, it didn't really have that. You hit enter. Now, the people that put it in were fairly certain that that was so obvious that it was like singing the ABC song to somebody because we all can read. But it wasn't that obvious. And it wasn't obvious to folk that were using it from the outside either. And so it was like, well, and they were like, well, the button is ugly. The tab is ugly. You don't need it. You just hit enter because what you do when you click the tab is you enter, right? And I'm like, put the enter button back because we're all used to doing it. Can't we get it back? And they're like, yeah, we took it out because we thought it was ugly on the page. No, put it back. Yes, we don't have the problem anymore. And if you're in a hurry and you just must, you can still click enter. It's all right. Let's go to hygiene and the dress code. So you need training. Hygiene and the dress code. I guess you need training on this too, come to think of it. This is a good point. Muhammad and others are saying there should be no problem because you just look around and see how people are dressed, and you dress accordingly. There is a certain generational gap about what is appropriate for business wear that even I see as an attorney. Now, I think that dressing relatively formal is appropriate for clients. It's a respectful act, right? And it is not something that we ever thought about. But now clients is different because clients are paying you. But we oftentimes see people who are dressed fairly inappropriately. And they certainly don't think it is. So if you're going to have a dress code, you should tell people. Yeah. You should tell people that they need to dress. You know what I tell generationally? I call it business fancy. Yeah. Because people think business is torn jeans and flip-flops. And not necessarily. Because you're gonna look like the delivery kid. And that does make a difference. Your appearance does make a difference. And your hygiene level makes a difference. Unless you are such a genius that we all have to just excuse it and say, well, he's a genius. And he's a genius with technology, with numbers, with whatever it is that you're a genius with. And they kind of look rumpled, and they hardly ever see the public. And so it doesn't make any difference if they kind of look and smell like they've been dragged out of a small, dark box in the basement. Because, well, I mean, you can't argue with great minds. And if that's true, then you have to accommodate it and warn people. Mm-hmm. Because clients have an expectation. And you will get more respect if you meet that expectation of how you're supposed to look. I must confess that I dress kind of formal for clients. I don't actually think anything that's kind of sexually revealing is appropriate. I don't want to low-cut anything or really tight anything. I dress in an extremely conservative manner. You can look at the website, see how I look. That's how I look. Well, all right, there's old pictures, there's new pictures, but I look dressed for business in all of them, let's face it, right? Yeah. Yes, thank you. People are saying, especially when you're standing next to Biden and you're wearing that pink jacket. Yeah, well, yeah, that's how I looked that day. Didn't do it special for the photo. But everybody in the room looked basically like that, except most of them were wearing a plain dark color. I was kind of standing out color-wise. Yeah. Well, yeah, so it's kind of like, you look around. Personal hygiene, by the way, people ask about personal hygiene. Personal hygiene should be handled discreetly. We're talking about isn't so clean, right? Personal hygiene should be handled discreetly. Sometimes people get dirty during the day and they don't realize it. I've done that. I've leaned on something. Something has leaned on me. I've spilled something. And I don't realize it, or I've sat in something. I would like somebody to tell me. I would. But they should tell me discreetly so I can go to the bathroom, take off my outfit, and wash it off or wipe it or whatever, right? Yeah, I'd like to know if I'm dragging toilet paper on my shoe. I really, 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 really would. But it's something that you could come up to me and say kind of quietly, right? Yeah. And sometimes it makes no difference. You have to decide that. Yes. All important. Because we are going to always act with respect, which is our next topic. People are asking what I personally do if somebody refuses to conform. Did I explain it depends how important they are to me? Not important to the world necessarily, but important to the solutions, important to the infrastructure, important to the organization, right? And even so, I do tell people, I tell them that they need to look around and dress like similar. They can still have their own personal style. It can be purple, but it needs to be not a tank top and cutoffs in purple. It needs to be a purple suit coat. Hey, not unreasonable in my opinion. I mean, you can still have personal style. For God's sake, I do. And if you're going to truly have personal style, like you see people wear a cowboy hat or something in court, they've earned that personal style because they are bragging, really, that they're too important to conform. That, look at me, I am this person, I am known for my cowboy hat, right? Yeah. The gentleman who started Make-A-Wish Foundation, which is a big charity in the United States and probably all over the world, where they send children who are ill, who have kind of a wish, not necessarily their last wish, they probably recover, but they like something to be a treat, and they raise funds and they send them and their family on a treat, because after all, if you've got a really, really seriously sick child, the family kind of suffers too, because there's a whole bunch of tension and money and stuff put into the really, really sick child. So the siblings and everybody get to go on the trip is what I'm telling you. So it's a big treat. It's a family treat. And he started it a long time ago, and it's one of the biggest charities possibly in the world, but absolutely in the United States. It's got chapters everywhere. It's fabulous. He is a retired gentleman. And he came to dinner the other night at a private club, and he was wearing, a Stetson hat, a black hat, a big cowboy hat, and cowboy boots and a big belt. Nobody else was dressed like that, but ladies and gentlemen, my friends, he could. It's his personal style, and there's a reason that he has this style, because he wants you to notice him. He's an elderly man. He's fairly tall. He's not that distinctive. He wants you to notice him in the crowd so you can come up to him and say, Frank, which is his name, Frank, I would like to donate $1 million to your charity. Well, yeah. Because you've gotten kind of excited by the presentation and like that, and he gets up there with the presentation looking like that, and there's a reason for it. It's so you can spot him in a crowd, so you know which one he is, and he doesn't blend in with the other Caucasian men in dark suits. Hey, now that's a reason. But if you're just a first year, or you are new and you have no experience, or the reason you're there is kind of the same reason everybody else is there at the negotiation, maybe you shouldn't dress in a clown suit. Yeah, maybe not. Maybe it's a sign of respect to understand that you need to dress in some way that is reasonable with the expectations of the people there. Maybe that's a generational thing, but it is commented upon, and it is not generally a good idea. Right? Right. I mean, you could decide, and maybe I think it's a particularly not good idea because I dress kind of formal. I dress kind of formal so that people also can find me. I'm kind of distinctive looking. Right? Yeah. I look like I look on the front of the website, right? It's kind of distinctive look. It's a kind of a distinctive look. It's not exactly a, it's not exactly unusual or a real, is the cowboy hat and boots and stuff a costume? Well, kinda. He comes from an area where more people wear that than most areas other. He comes from Arizona. So maybe not, but it sure is distinctive. Right, right. Respect is what we're going to talk about next, because we're going to run out of time, because I haven't respected the clock. Remember that respect flows in both directions. As, yes, as Hussein and Lee and others are saying, respect flows in both directions. Mm-hmm. I expect you to respect me by being, and we're going to talk about it, civil, and being courteous. And if you can't remember my name, I think that you should call me ma'am or something like that. I don't always call people ma'am, but I do respect them. A lot of times I can't remember people's names. I know a lot of people that are similar looking. I meet a lot of people in a day. I do a lot of presentations. Yes, but I recognize their face and they know my name. So I am honored, and I put out my hand to take their hand and say, how lovely to see you again. Yes, and like that, respect goes in both directions. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true too. Michelle and others are saying that sometimes people in a position of power kind of demand respect. Well, if someone is the CEO, then he or she, their position gives them a certain amount of respect that you should honor, right? Yeah, you should, I don't know, not blow them off in some way, right? Unless you're doing it deliberately. Hey, sometimes there's a deliberate. Mm-hmm. People are talking about team members. A lot of times, I deal with teams that have been kind of forcefully made. I don't know how to say it better than that. They are not people who are on the same level and are peers. It seems to be popular to kind of force team building across work designation lines, as in the manager is on the team with the managed, right? You've got different levels of person on the same team. And we have, and this is announced to be a safe place, right? Safe place where we can all voice our opinions and we can disagree and like that. Even though we are unequal in level, employment level usually is what I see, but even unequal in some sort of other power, it could be any kind of an organization that does this, it's popular to do. We're all going to get together and bond, right? Okay, maybe. But you know I'm a practical person, and I've been doing this a long time. Yeah. A lot of you are using the word theoretically. Theoretically, this is a good idea. And I think that it is a good idea for different voices to be heard by different levels of people. But, and mainly that is complaints, essentially speaking, of what is wrong and what needs to be done. This needs to be heard by upper management. This is the usefulness of these teams. The usefulness is it gives you an ear. It gives you someone to carry the message that this is really a bad idea upstairs, or this is really a good idea upstairs, but it gives voice. and it gives a way to a form of expression. But you must also understand that nobody, it's not a safe place in that respect. Nobody can keep apart their relationship in the team and their relationship outside in the real world, right? Yeah, there are repercussions. Now, a lot of times you've got a session where it's not really complaints, but it's suggestions. And if you keep the civility rule, which we're about to talk about, it's not a bad idea. But you need to understand that it's not a free zone team either. You still got levels of employment, levels of power, levels of importance to the organization, right? And you have to have that hierarchy understanding. Because otherwise you're going to be like, well, let's all, you know, force this. And it's like, no, we need to have a frank discussion, and then this needs to be taken upward, and then we need to make another team where we institute whatever it is. And like that, it's not such a simple act. Because people think, oh, well, everybody's at the table. Well, yes, they are, but in different capacities, because there's still a hierarchy. Mm-hmm. Yes, and that goes towards respect. Everybody must act in a respectful manner, even if they're one step from God, right? And they're talking to somebody who, in their opinion, is not as close, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Being their opinion, which is always subject to, well, that's your opinion, but it might be. You have to understand that people do understand this real world repercussions, is what I'm telling you. Mm-hmm. People are also talking about respect for the past. Yes, as long as it's really relevant. I'm not big on whole sessions talking about what we did before, unless the purpose of that is to guide what we're doing now. That would be a good purpose, right? Yeah. To guide what we're doing now might be a good purpose to talk about what we did before. Yes. Mm-hmm. People are talking really about culture. And the idea is that you must understand the culture in order to effectuate change. Stuff doesn't just happen, especially in corporate culture. There was a reason for it. Is the reason still valid? Or has it somehow morphed the cultural response so that it's really not usable anymore, right? Well, that's what you got to figure out. Is it valid or is it not so much, right? Yeah. You need reason. You need reason and you need agreement to change, right? Yeah. You have to agree that that circumstances have changed. You know how there's an old expression about times have changed? Well, yeah, they have. Circumstances change over the years. And what was a truly good idea then might be impeding a truly good idea now. Mm-hmm. Yes. Which leads us to the idea of comfort zones. Comfort zones are really the idea that it's always been done this way. Therefore, we're going to do it like this because it's always been done this way, right? Yeah, you need a reason to change. And sometimes people go, oh, yeah. But they don't like, you know, your comfort zone, you're pretty certain what the response is going to be, for example. Ah, gee, and now you're not so certain. You have to think. Thinking is hard. So let's look at the solutions before we run out of time. Hang on one second. I'm just going to take a sip of water. Hang on, everybody. I am back. Sorry about that. Thank you. Yes, it's a live show. It's the water. It's like, oh, can we all hear her? Solutions. Let's do something about these problems. Let's not just accept that that happens, the generational differences are something that happens. They are not. We're all going to pull together. The first thing we're going to have is, thank you, a bunch of people are drilling it in, the civility rules. Yes. Basically speaking, we're going to have an atmosphere of respect and conviviality. Respect and conviviality. I announced the civility rules. They are the only rules that Recipe for Peace now actually has. And at their very core, they basically say we will not be rude to one another in any way. You'll know it when you see it. The talking out of turn, the sighing, the rolling of the eyes. These are uncivil, people. I always announce the civility rules are in effect, even if I've seen this group before, and even if I'm pretty darn sure they're not going to go uncivil. I like to make sure that everybody remembers the civility rules, because you never know, and I want to be able to pull them out. You need to announce the civility rules, even though it seems obvious. It is not. You need to announce the civility rules and enforce them immediately, consistently, and fairly. Announce the civility rules and enforce immediately, consistently, and fairly. Right? Yes. So that you can have an atmosphere of respect. Mm-hmm. Yes. The other thing you must have when you have civility rules, because, you know, they're just words. And sometimes you've got a bully in the bunch, and they think it's funny. And they go, well, yeah, that's nice, in theory, the civility rules and respect and like that. But if I don't, what you gonna do about it? Right? What if I don't want to respect the civility rules? And I'm kind of a serial abuser. I keep doing it. What you gonna do about it? And the answer should be something definite. Usually the something definite comes because you've already made a contingency plan with the employer. Remember that on this show we use the term employer very, very liberally. It is anybody who had the good sense to bring us in as leader of this group. Anyone who had the good sense to bring us in as leader of this group, it does not necessarily imply an employment relationship. Yes, an actual employment relationship. But somebody who's in charge, somebody who can give you the power to report to them, to have them do something about it. Ideal in business world, I usually can impact someone's salary. I can have them fined, as in taken out of their paycheck, fined, not you have to give me money. I can have them demoted because only people of this rank and above get to be here, right? Yeah, stuff like that. The civility rules are nice, but they need teeth. And that's an agreement you need to be able to bring the employer in to take a look at this, right? To have a little talk with someone and explain the facts of life. I like the civility rule power to be put in writing before I sign any kind of a contract to be leader. I am quite serious about that. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, and you there's always one, and well, not always one. I don't have that very often anymore because I have the reputation. But in case you've got someone who thinks it's funny and not funny, my specialty, if I have a specialty, is to take on groups that have already, how should I put this with delicacy and good taste, not been successful. And they have an objective that they must meet, right? And so they're already in failure mode. And sometimes, if I can't avoid it, because I try to avoid this situation, sometimes the prior leader who couldn't get it done is now a participant in the group and I'm the leader. Well, let's think about that for a moment. Ah, gee willikers, right? Yeah. And so it is important that that person not fulfill their agenda of having the group fail, because it would be to their advantage to be able to say, I couldn't do it, but Sue couldn't do it either. Nobody could, right? Yeah, it's not doable. Mm-mm, we're not going to have that problem, right? Right. The next thing we're going to need in order to reach any differences, generational or anything else, come to think of it, is empathy. Remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. In order to know what we're doing and what we're dealing with, and in order to really have empathy, we're going to have to break out the 5W questions. They are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. Mm-hmm. Because they will enable us to understand and to listen with an open mind and heart. And that's the key to it. We need to understand who told you that. What did they say? When did you hear it? And why did you have this response? Do we ask it in that way exactly? No. We use discretion. We figure out a way of doing it in a civil manner. Do we ask in that order? Not necessarily. Do we always ask in front of everybody? Not necessarily. These are all leadership judgment calls. It has to do with how your circumstances, what's going on, right? But you need to have all preconceptions set aside so we can go forward as a team and get to our workable, successful outcome. I see groups. I see think tanks and task forces and like that I don't lead because I think it's a stupid idea. But then I get called in later. And I look at this as the past, what was done in the past. And what the experience has been, excuse me. Sorry, need a sip of water. It's like 100 degrees here. The summer has truly hit. Yes, I have a fan. Yes, it doesn't make any difference. I need water. I digress, didn't I? And a lot of times they've looked like they have reached a successful outcome. Everybody shakes hands, pictures or photos are taken. We all put it on our resume that we were on this task force. It's all good and jolly and like that, and yeah. And there are balloons. No, there aren't usually balloons, but there's usually some sort of a public demonstration. Aren't we fabulous? But the answer is no, you're not fabulous, because you did something in principle. I hate those words. In principle, in theory, that's completely unworkable. It's not going any further. It's not hitting the real world because it can't. Nobody can do whatever it is you've decided would be a good idea to do because you don't have any plan for how to implement. No, 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 no. We want to be able to make some changes. We want to be able to implement something for good. We want to get somewhere for our time. And that's why we need the civility and the empathy, right? And the team building across generations, right? The listening with an open mind. Mm-hmm. And let's set aside our preconceptions about what we can do or what we will think because we are of different generations. No. which leads us to the idea, people asking about role playing. Yes and no. Because you've seen me do it, yes. But you've seen me do role playing where you take the opposite side and argue it. Everybody takes an opposite side than what they, but their side they're on, kind of, and argue it and kind of do a mock negotiation of a trial like thing. You've seen me do that in workshops, right? In real life, because workshops are a good exercise in let's all think this through. In real life, actual role playing like that should be done, in my opinion, and I've had experience with this, I've seen this done, very carefully. It's a good way to have things collapse because people take offense at the way you're playing their role, right? Yeah, it brings out perceived bias and preconceptions and like that. Is that good? Well, maybe. I mean, it's a good way of doing that. But you got to be careful that it doesn't blow civility. I've seen that explode in my day. I rarely do it in real life. We do it in non-real life in a seminar or a workshop just to demonstrate how to really think about all sides and think with an open mind and an open heart, right? We demonstrate that everybody has a valid point, even if it's not something that you agree with, but it's valid, right? Yeah. But to actually do that in real life is tricky. Now you can make a decision. You're the leader, and it might be the right group. I can't even think of one. No, I can't. People are saying, give an example. In a seminar or a workshop would be the right group, right? Like students would be the right group. Something that is a teaching example and is not so much a real-life example would be the right group for that. The last thing we're going to be talking about is the idea across generations to mentor and to socialize. And this is a really good idea. I mentor. I choose my mentees, the people that I mentor, very carefully because it needs to go in both directions, right? Yeah, it needs to go in both directions. If you're going to mentor someone, you want to get some sort of a mentoring back that they can help you with, right? Yeah, let's deal with it in a positive manner to really go up and back, right? I'm not against it, but I'm not real fond of those assigned mentoring things where somebody who is in a higher position gets assigned the new hires, so to speak, and is supposed to mentor them. And they've been matched not by any kind of personal traits, but by level of employment. Now, sometimes this is the best thing that ever happened to both of them. Most times it's not a real serious mentoring where you can ask questions, but everybody's very careful and tenuous about it. It's not really a trust relationship. The idea of mentoring is a trust relationship, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about socializing together? Let's all go and do something that we all think is fun. Let's do something that some of us think is fun and the others of us don't have experience with. Like I told you at the beginning of the show, I took somebody to the symphony. That's something that I think is fun. And that they didn't, they had a preconception that they would not think it was fun. But they had a great time. And they really, and it broadened their idea of the world and of what other people think. And it was a generational gap. It was a generational reach. We reached over, crossed generational lines, and went, yeah, let's go someplace. One of the things that usually goes with that kind of a sentence is food, right? Right, yeah. And remember that we also need to celebrate each success together, right? Do something, not the same thing each time. Let's have a vote. Let's put ideas in the hat. Let's take ideas from each, well, from each generation, from each idea, right? What is it that we find fun? Mm-hmm. The other day, we had a team. We had a team celebration, and quite some members of the team really wanted to go bowling. I have never been bowling before. Now, did I have a good time? Was it interesting? Yes, I was with my team. Yes, there was all kinds of food that's really bad for you that was delicious, and it gave me a chance to eat all of it, right? Right, because food is important. That's why we use food as a tool. Oops, we're not getting to the recipes, but we're going to run out of time. But food is an excellent tool to get people together. So is a new venue where we can all laugh and wear silly shoes. Could I bowl? No, I couldn't lift the darn ball. I couldn't stand on one foot and throw it down the thing and hit any kind of a pin. What's the thing to the side? I learned lots of new words. I learned the word gutter. Yeah, because I couldn't get the ball to roll down the path. Down the, well, I obviously didn't learn the word for wherever it is, the ball. The lane. Thank you. Yes. I couldn't get the ball to travel down the lane, right? This is, and was it fun? Would I go again to bowling? Well, no, not unless it was a whole group and I was kind of part of the group, right? I would not go. Was it fun? It was interesting. Was it productive? Yeah, because we all had a good time. There was at least half the people had never been in a bowling alley before. I was one of them. I don't know what I expected. I expected something that I had seen on television from years ago. I had a preconception that was completely wrong. And people who were really good at it and thought it was fun tried mentoring people who were terrible at it. I didn't even know that balls had weights. I thought a bowling ball was a bowling ball. Yeah, most of us didn't know anything. And if we decided to sit it out, that was fine too. And we could watch the people who got to show off, which is always fun, right? That they had some skill, right? Yeah. And we made a convivial group, and when we all got done, we all agreed that it was a nice group celebration. We'd worked hard. We'd worked together. We had bonded. It was civil. It was respectful. It was interesting. And quite a few of us were never going bowling again unless we all went together, the same stuff. And quite frankly, there were quite a few of us who were not only never going bowling again, but we next time we were going, we were just going to sit around and chat and have food. And not attempt to throw that ball into the gutter because they're never going to be good at it unless you have practice, right? Right. Yeah, but was it a generational thing? Yes. Was it a team-building thing? Yes, it was, as a matter of fact, right? Was it something that most of us would have done? Well, no, not really. Yes, it was, well... Okay, people asking how we decided upon it. There was kind of a democratic way. There was a vote. We all said, yeah, we'll give it a try. It was kind of promoted, I must confess, because somebody in the group had a way of corporate treating for it. They paid for the food and the beer and the whatever expense there was bowling alley-wise. And like that. Yes. Yeah, but so there was a kind of an incentive. But it was a celebration. And my friends, you should celebrate each success with your team. It's a very good idea. We're going to talk about the recipes next time, I hope. A lot of times we don't quite get to them, do we? My friends, we are out of time. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.